The Bluegrass Marathon on Saturday, February 15th.
From 9 to 6 on KBOO Portland.
Hello, we are Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kboo.org, all one word, or message us on Instagram at @PACUnderground.
Hey, good morning, good morning. I think the sun's going to come out. It is important to know that this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show here in Portland, Oregon. I want you to know that the number to call is 231-8187. Abe is not here. It's just me, Joe. So you can kind of talk with me. It is really important to be able to understand what's going on these days. The pattern is depressing. Let's just say that. I think that there's a kind of crisis of consciousness that faces everyone who wants to see a progressive agenda on the part of the United States. And I am not wise enough to know what that means exactly. That is to say, I'm not the guy or the person to say, okay, well, we need to go to with some kind of right wing Buddha buddy, or that very compelling Amy Klobuchar makes perfect sense and therefore should be supported. I'm not the person to say that Elizabeth Warren somehow ran into trouble by being too specific. And I'm certainly not going to say that Bernie, with his evidently one-issue campaign, is the bad guy in this game. And yet, here's the thing. We are facing real fascism. And this is a little bit like Germany in the 20s. We really, really don't have an alternative that can survive the thrust of fascism itself. And let me give you a couple of examples that are really obvious, and probably most of you will agree. One of the candidates running on a Democratic platform is Mr. Bloomberg. Now, if you know Bloomberg at all and you know his history, he was really one of the leaders of the repression of persons of color in the city of New York. He believed in stop and frisk. He believed in all sorts of things that really, really were ugly, particularly for black men, but persons of color generally. And now he has turned his vast fortune into a potentially, he says, a progressive attempt to get rid of Trump. Well, that may be. I can't make a judgment on that. I don't know what that means. I don't know how effective he'll be. His money will certainly be welcomed by the Democratic Party because they are not wealthy in the same way that the Republicans are. They can't draw on the same kind of support that the Republicans do from the ruling class. But this is a very tenuous and weird situation. The Democratic Party does not have a clear populist agenda that can draw everyone in. The fact of the matter is that Donald Trump will have infinite money and plans an infinitely ugly campaign. He is a guy who makes any promise that works and then turns around and betrays that promise, betrays the people who believed in him. He is not simply a fascist, which is part of his agenda, but an opportunist within the context of fascism. That is, he will say anything, do anything, promise anything, and then not deliver on those promises, and in the process, betray anyone who gets in his way. So it's a scary situation. And I really wouldn't mind hearing from some people who have got maybe a better analysis than I do. I don't know. But I think I want to start out, before I have you call us, and I do welcome your calls, to define fascism a little more clearly, because I think people have lost track of exactly what that is. And I've, for years, used the term friendly fascism to describe what I feel is happening in the United States. We tend to think of fascism in terms of Spain under Franco, or Mussolini in Italy, or horribly Hitler in Germany. And these were not friendly fascists. But this is really important to understand. What fascism is classically is a situation where eventually one party takes dominance, actually rules, and it rules with the cooperation and the interaction of the classic ruling capitalist class. That is fascism. In the process of doing that, it restricts civil rights, civil liberties, and in general, choices among the things that people take for granted. This fascist potential is very alive and very real in the United States. Now, people say, hey, being an alarmist, you know. No, I'm not. This has been going on for some time, and we all know it. And by the way, in the middle of all this is an alternative reality online that has become so potent that a good third, I would guess, of Americans totally believe in an alternative reality. And that reality is a kind of right-wing paranoid view. So this is a very, very, from my point of view, a very scary thing, and I think it should be scary to you. We are seeing Congress become weaker and weaker. We saw that the Republicans, in cooperation with Trump, allowed him to be the criminal that he is out front. And he is going to take money whenever he can from services for human beings, programs for human beings ranging from education to healthcare, and put that money to whatever uses he wants, largely for military and, of course, for his wall. Now, I like the fact that part of his wall blew down in the wind. That's a nice image, but I don't think it's going to stop the thing. I feel that we are in a situation that is very, very frightening, and the choices we face are really kind of horrible. I don't know how possible it is for a democratic socialist to take the helm of the Democratic Party. And I don't know if the party itself would allow that. And I don't believe that it's a question of democracy itself, because it isn't. The whole set of rules, a way in which the Democratic Party operates has been not democratic. And that means that, you know, really, we're still talking about a ruling class dominance. Now, one of the things about Trump that people don't maybe know, but they should know, is that he hung out, not only is he the fascist guy, not only is the egotistical maniac that he obviously is, but he was a guy who, by reputation, prior to running for president, was a snorter of alternative drugs, shall we say. And I now have heard, and I believe it's true, that he really likes ephedrine, things that essentially speed up not his mind, but his actions and his thinking. And there's something else going on that I have to say, And I don't want to create a paranoid image, but I don't know how else to put it. The United States has developed a new tactical weapon, which is a very important development. It's a small, Guild nuclear weapon. You put it on the head of a missile and you knock out not a whole city, but a good significant part of a city. It's a nuclear bomb that is about, in range, about a tenth of the power of the original Hiroshima bomb. This is a new thing. It's very much already in operational effort. We know that at least one submarine has left the United States heading for somewhere in the Atlantic with these weapons on board. And we know that Trump is not disposed to avoid war. He really wants to have a war that he can have dominance over, absolutely control. This is all in the context of corporate giveaways, of reductions of services for human beings, of lack of health care that's adequate, of housing that's inadequate, and I can make a list, you could make a list, you get the idea. This is a very frightening situation. And I have to say, I don't know how, in terms of the standard national politics, one can figure things out. The one thing I do know that is really clear is that Trump must be repudiated and he must be defeated at the polls. That leaves one in a really embarrassing situation because, hey, Bloomberg, come on. Buttigieg, come on. Bernie, well, yeah, except that Bernie speaks one game repeatedly and has not changed his tune in a long, long time. And I don't believe the Democratic Party, which is an establishment party, will allow him to become the dominant figure in the Democratic Party. It worries me a great deal. I don't believe the Democratic Party is democratic, by the way. So, I don't know. I'm very sad about it. I noticed that in Germany, the Social Democrats, again, a conservative party, have lost their leadership and have seemed to lose their way, while the fascists in Germany, true fascists, are dominant more and more. All of this is taking place in the context of dreadful, dreadful climate change and, by the way, epidemic disease. So it's kind of creepy out there. And I am really a little bit in despair, which, by the way, I've always thought is kind of a sin. But here we are, and here I am, and here you are, and I want to hear your thinking, your strategies, your response to all of this. So let's go to the phones, 231-8187. Corey, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
First thing you asked is, what is fascism? You know, it's a form of far-right authoritarianism, forcible suppression. But the reason fascism happened, and you and I are both educators, our education system in America, I think that it's at a grave place. I think it has been at a grave place. I have a student, and I'm not going to, you know, get into certain things. He's a veteran. And he is a Trump supporter. And finally, about 2 weeks ago, when Trump made the comments about the veterans, you know, the PTSD, that finally shook him to his core. He's like, I don't know if I can support that guy anymore. But then on the flip side, he looks up. But that's what it took. It wasn't the racism. It wasn't the sexism. It was that I'm a veteran, and he's talking. He said other things about veterans before, but finally, because this guy has PTSD, he's like, man, he has no idea what it's like over there. And when you spoke about the budget cuts, you know, he wants to cut the CDC right now. I looked at the budget that he proposed. He wants to cut the CDC, wants to cut Medicare. That would be suicide in a rational society. But I don't think that, you know, our society is quite rational right now, when I think that once again goes back to our education system. And my final point is Bloomberg. I just listened to the video of Bloomberg in 2015, you know, talking about, you know, throw up against the wall, stop and frisk him. I'm a person of color, and I've only been in New York City once. I didn't go to New York City because I didn't feel like I needed to be stopped and frisked. With that being said, and I hate to say this, if it's between Michael Bloomberg and Donald Trump, I will vote for Michael Bloomberg. And it's once again that lesser of two evils. But if it's between someone who I consider sane, I don't agree with stop and frisk. Like I said, I'm a person of color, and the fact that he's so adamant about it, I mean, it was just, you know, a couple months ago he finally denounced it, and he goes to the black church. Okay, I was wrong. Like, I get so sick of seeing the people go to the black churches and woe is me, please forgive me. But if it's down to him and Trump, I got to vote for Bloomberg. And that's just, I would have no, it wouldn't even be a choice.
No, I hear what you're saying. I think what I was trying to pose, not very well perhaps, at the beginning of the show, is the terrible dilemmas we face. And I think you're bringing out very clearly part of that dilemma. And I want to thank you for the call. I don't pretend to have a solution, and I'm not sure there is a solution. I do know that the continuation of the kind of Trump authoritarian kleptocracy that's going on right now is very, very dangerous. And when I brought up earlier the fact that we are now having weapons that are plausibly usable, for example, to attack Iran, I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that's plausible because they are low-yield nuclear weapons. I've become even more frightened. And when we have a leader who is really amazingly, abysmally ignorant of everything you can think of in the regular world of knowledge, it scares the hell out of me. On top of that, the choices become really weird. I absolutely think that Bernie would be, in a logical world, the candidate which everyone should be supporting. I also think that when Bloomberg pours literally billions of dollars into the electoral process, he inevitably perverts it. And I don't trust the guy. I don't know that he is in conscious awareness of exactly who he is and how he operates. Anyway, these are problems I face. I really want to hear from people. I need advice. And maybe I'm going to get some right now from Francis. Hey, Francis, are you there?
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hello. I'm good. I understand your despair. I can relate to that, but I got to keep hope alive, as they say.
Sure.
And I believe that the opposite of that man in the White House right now is Bernie Sanders. And
oh, I think you're right in that sense.
Ilhan Omar, when she was getting all that flack recently, and I'll recall an interview they had with her as she was walking at a demonstration. I think it was with her daughter. And she just kept saying, "Love Trump's hate. Love Trump's hate." And then I started thinking about that, and it's actually true, you know. And people keep saying Sanders has the same message and he's had it for years. Well, that's a very good message. It's about government of the people, by the people, and for the people, rather than corporate interests. And that is the message that everyone is starting to hear from him. I understand that his rally last night was the biggest one that New Hampshire has had so far. And I saw clips of the speech from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and it was awesome. It was an awesome speech, and the momentum is there. If the DNC will stay out of the way this time, it might work.
No, I think you're
right. And I truly do believe that he could beat that man in the White House in a landslide if he's allowed to be the nominee.
I think you might be right. I don't know how the game will be played out. I don't know where the money will fall. And I don't know how the Democratic Party, who seems to be able to lose under the most ideal circumstances, is going to operate in the context of Bernie's obvious
right.
popularity. So I don't know.
So many young people are supporting Bernie.
That's true.
It really tickles me because they're very adamant about it. They hear what he's saying. They hear it loud and clear.
Uh-huh.
And they like what he's saying. So, we should just let it go, let it flow, instead of keep saying, you know, I don't know if he can win. He can win. Period. And just go with that.
Well, I think, you know, I appreciate that. I want to be clear here. I have no animal in the game, no horse in the
right.
race.
I just would have my constitution in this country in the game.
Well, that's right. The big game is exactly that. And
so we want the opposite of what's going on right now.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, yeah, literally that's true. And I am not opposed to Bernie at all. I think he's a good man. I think he's on a good crusade. I'm concerned about the fact that the paradox of my memory of history, my understanding of what happened in Germany and elsewhere, always makes me concerned when we have a powerful left challenging an extremely powerful right. The whole process that I saw in our Congress a week ago or so disgusted me, terrified me, and made me understand the degree to which... Well, let me finish the sentence. The degree to which things have become perverted. Now, go ahead.
Okay. I can relate to that, but what I was thinking on those same lines. It's like, okay, we keep calling it the left. It is what America is supposed to be, what we profess to be, what our Constitution says. You know, let's just uphold the American Constitution and do what is right by it. And if we do that, I guess it's left.
Well,
because that's what they're calling left now.
Well,
it's pretty much not right. I mean, it's opposite of right.
Okay, I'll buy that.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
It's just doing what we profess we are.
I think when you say we, you're talking
call
about
that the United States.
Well, but you're not talking about
this country professes to be.
What is it that? Well, I have to ask this then. I guess what do you think this country is historically?
Well, according to our Constitution, it is a country where everyone is a citizen. Everyone has rights. Everyone's rights are protected. And it's for the good of the people, our government exists. Now, if that's a bad thing...
No, that's not a bad thing, obviously.
And that's not left either. I think Sanders is kind of... They're starting to talk about it as though he is... wanting to continue the policies of FDR.
Improve
upon them.
Well, I think you're
make
right.
Make them better.
Yeah. I think there's one important thing, and I agree with you on this. The things that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was able to accomplish in the 30s and into the 40s were accomplished because the ruling class became terrified when the Great Depression took place. Now, we had a depression, which isn't even called that, in 08, and we are not yet recovered from that. And we had a president who seemed very able, but unable to deal with a Congress that absolutely blocked him at every turn. I'm talking about Barack Obama. His intentions were good. His degree of rationality and calm perhaps worked against the possibility of his becoming the charismatic leader that was desperately needed on the part of the American people on the left. But I really appreciate what you're saying. I know there's lots of people who agree with you, many of them probably listening to this station. My despair, I hope, does not discourage people from being involved, and I certainly hope that whoever the hell finally gets chosen by the incompetent Democrats beats the you-know-what out of Donald Trump, because he is a stone-crazy, weird fascist.
It's so obvious. I mean, it's the corporate interest. I mean, we can call that the ruling class if we want, but it's the corporate interest.
Yeah.
And there is no conscience there. It's only short-term profit. So, you know, if we could flip the switch instantly and give them a way to make profits on life-sustaining things rather than war and conflict, then that would be really nice for them. But I don't know. We can't do that instantly.
No, and we definitely...
If we keep promoting the policies and visions of the Sanders campaign and the movement, as he says, not me, us, mm-hmm. then there is an alternative. And the corporations can continue making money. But they will be making money more long-term, probably, on investing in life-sustaining project rather than conflict and incarceration and...
No, I think you're right. I want to give... I agree with much of what you're saying. In fact, most of what you're saying. And I appreciate the call, and I appreciate your hope, and I'm going to let you go and give some others an opportunity.
Carry on. I love you. Take care.
Okay. Great. God, it's nice to be loved. Okay. 231-8187. Let's go to George. George, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe, and I'm not going to mention a book.
Good.
I'm going to mention basically what Francis was talking about and say that the world and our country especially are all in the grip of some kind of capital, and that suggests that, well, the capitalists, the theorists, Adam Smith and many others were right, capital is powerful, and Francis was suggesting this, and I think it's perfectly important that if we stop regarding capital as something that needs to be grown apart from the well-being of our biosphere and our society here on Earth and in the U.S., and say, let's look at capital as our biosphere and social justice, and let's work on that. And Francis was saying something very close to that, I think. And so I would like to know, why is it we can't bring economics more robustly into the conversation and say it's time to get economics to serve the biosphere and social justice? So I'll leave it at that, and thank you very much. I'm interested. I don't have much to say beyond this.
No, that's fine, and I appreciate the insight. It would not, to my mind, be impossible to see the vast mechanisms of capital turn toward, for example, dealing with climate change. It's a long-term investment, though, and long-term investments are not popular in the stock market. Anyway, thanks a lot for the call. 231-8187. We got people calling us. Let's go to Ben. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi. First-time caller. I just wanted to pass something by you. I think that I'm a Bernie supporter, pretty close to Bernie or bust, and I'm wondering why on earth I would vote for Michael Bloomberg. In my mind, Trump is as bad as he is. He's also quite incompetent and not necessarily an ideologue. He's, in my mind, the least dangerous Republican we could have at this moment.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
I'm just saying you can count on the Republican Party to vomit up something worse in the future. So to, let's just say Bloomberg runs, wins the nomination as crookedly as he may, and we elect him, we're gonna have the same situation that we had with Obama out and him sort of just milquetoasting the working class, not really doing much for them. They're going to want to throw another stink bomb into the White House, and the next one won't be as stupid as Trump. We're lucky that it's Trump and not Pence, or Trump and not Tom Cotton. Like, I'll take Trump over Bloomberg, and I'm a Bernie supporter, and I don't see why I should perpetuate the Democratic Party, which is the real enemy. You can expect the Republican Party to be the opposition, but the party that's supposed to represent you, that's just much better sitting on its heels, taking the benefits from Republican legislation, doesn't really make any sense. They have to be gutted and removed, and I won't vote for Mike Bloomberg.
I think that's an interesting point, and I appreciate the call. I'm going to give some other people an opportunity, and I also want to, I'm going to let you go, but I want to throw another thing into the mix, which is a weird thing. It is now clear, and I'm taking this from the New York Times yesterday, it is now clear that there is this alternative reality online that is vigorous and powerful and effective. That is to say, many, many people believe many, many alternative realities, and that affects their voting, that affects their thinking, that affects their attitudes in all kinds of ways. And this is really happening fast, and it's really happening a lot. It's happening not just in the United States, but all over the world. I just wanted to throw that out there because many people may not be aware of that. Many of the people who listen to this station, to this programming, may not be aware of the degree to which people are fundamentally addicted to online false facts. And with that notion, I want to ask for more callers, 231-8187. Let's go out to Ruth. Ruth, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with your name.
Joe.
I thought I'd call in.
Just call me Joe.
Nice to meet you, Joe. I'm a regular listener, but I should say semi-regular. I don't often listen to the car or radio. But anyway, I just wanted to say, you were talking about despair, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so if you don't mind me saying, do you remember the despair that we all felt as a country in 9/11?
I personally didn't feel despair. I felt a little scared, but, you know, not despair.
Yeah, I mean, right away, like the very day it happened, in the weeks, and it was shock, but then things happening worse and worse, and the actions that I remember. So I was 16, I believe, when it happened, so I'm 34 now. So I'm speaking as a sort of like an elder millennial.
Okay.
You know, so... and I, you know, for us, for people like me, it really has been kind of one despair after the other.
Mm.
My particular age group, specifically, maybe a couple years younger and a couple years older, you know, people my age were shipped off to Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, and I would just was becoming politically aware right when all this stuff was happening. The Bush-Gore election was the first election I ever voted in, and having that stolen from us, that was so difficult. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
And so...
And you're right, it was stolen.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
No, I just... you just speak about despair, and it's kind of like... People like us, we've been under it for a long time.
Well,
my generation in particular, I would have to say.
No, I appreciate that, but here now you're putting me in the position of giving you a reassurance. I think there is a lot of very beautiful, powerful, good people on the left right now. I don't mean to diss Bernie. All I'm trying to get to is the absolute requirement that Trump be kicked out of office. And I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know that he would give it up.
We're feeling it. That's the thing. That's, you know, the feel the burn. That's what we're feeling.
I think you're right.
We're there with you. We're right there. I quit Facebook. I've quit Twitter. Like, people my age are kind of waking up. And I think a lot of people, I think a lot of America was sort of, I don't know. I don't know what to say, because like Trump could do anything in my mind. He could try to start a war somehow. And I mean, I know it's absolutely might be out of ballpark to even suggest that. But
no, I don't think so. You know, I think if he gets cornered, which hasn't yet apparently happened, that's one of his options. And he has no morals, and he has no hesitation, and he has no empathy. So starting a war is one of the things that we do have to worry about.
Here, can I say something that's interesting, though? Okay, so I remember, I was actually living in Utah, going to college in Utah when we invaded Iraq, and all that shock and awe stuff.
Uh-huh.
And here I was surrounded by, I don't know if you know, Utah is the most Republican-heavy state in the country. They're the most, like 99% of them vote Republican or something like that. It's not 99%, it's like 96%, between 90 and 96% or something like that, every election. And so they're diehard lockstep Republicans. It's part of kind of their fact that most of them, they all share a common religion, the Mormon faith, that they all do what they're told in a way. And I thought it was very, very interesting. I detest Romney, okay, because I'm familiar with him, because I was living in Utah for a while, but I thought it was very interesting that he stepped out and made a stance against Trump. I thought that, and people in Utah are actually kind of siding with him on that. I said that was like, wow, that I never thought that was going to happen.
I have to say, without making an evaluation of the Mormon faith or the Christian faith or any other faith, that in fact, if you are a person of faith, Trump is not your person. I mean, he's this is a guy who has only one religion, and it's called Donald Trump.
Right. Right. And you know, this is when I was in Utah, and I was trying to tell people. So I was in college, and people my age were going to Iraq, and you know, I even protested. You know, children are getting bombed, and I'm trying to tell people there who are people of faith that these children are getting bombed, and you know, they just wouldn't care. It didn't affect them. Didn't like, not my problem, not my issue. God is mysterious, works in mysterious ways, and all this stuff, you know. So I think it's very interesting that there's also, I think what's going on in Utah is there are slowly, and I think it's like slowly, it's been kind of a decades process, but people are starting to wake up to some of the issues in the Republican Party
that don't actually,
you know, mix with their faith. So I think that's interesting.
I think it is interesting. I'm going to give some other folks a chance. I'm really glad you called. And it's interesting how you coped with Utah. A very beautiful landscape, by the way. Okay, let's go 2318187. Let's go to Sharon.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I've been listening, and I just want to say that I really understand your despair, and I feel like I have a clear picture of all the odds against us pulling out of this situation. But I start to question when I hear people who, like yourself, for example, who pose the question, can Bernie win? And I feel in a way that it's playing to the narrative of the DNC and the Republican Party, because they're casting doubt when in fact the numbers would imply that yes, he can. And I know that there could be all sorts of voting hijinks or, you know, at the polls and stuff, but that maybe a better narrative would be to start saying yes, he can, and to really put that in the minds, because I hear people who I know who share my views, and they're starting to go, well, I don't know if I could vote for Bernie because he may not win, and I'm going to try to vote the winner instead of voting the person you believe in. And I think the numbers really are there, and that anyway, it's just a shift in the way we present it, and I wanted to put that forth to you, as especially as a person who is talking to a lot of people and kind of a mouthpiece, that you have that potential power to put that forth. And I think when people start feeling that, you're going to see a shift in the energy and the way things are going. And so while I totally get you on the despair, maybe we can put forth a different narrative.
Well,
that was my thought.
Yeah, let me thank you. And first of all, part of what I have to say is that a little bit of my presentation of self here is to be provocative. I certainly believe that whoever the Democrats put up for president, I would support that person purely because it ain't Trump. Furthermore, if Bernie, perchance, actually got the nomination, I would be delighted. I'm simply frightened that the manipulations of the ruling class will dominate yet again, and we'll end up with an odd situation. But, gee, it would be cool. Actually, it would be cool if Bernie was the candidate, and I think he could win if we are giving a reasonable chance to him and if all of us really are willing to work hard. The one thing I want to say is, whoever the hell runs against Trump, everyone, everywhere must register to vote and must vote, because this guy, whatever else the other person turns out to be, this guy is an out-and-out fascist. So I want to give a chance for a lot of other people. 2318187. Harry, you're on the air.
Oh, greetings, and thank you for taking my call. Talking about despair, it was the most recent despair was when Trump was elected in 2016. Don't you remember how it was just dread? You could just feel it when people talk.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
That he won, it was just, oh, wow, that was despair.
Yeah, let's remember one important fact. He did not win the popular vote. He won by an accident of the constitutional system with the Electoral College. The whole campaign of the Democrats was, I think, in retrospect, poorly managed. But that doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that the popular vote, ordinary people like you and I, did not elect Donald Trump. The system did.
And that goes to the question, your first question about fascism. What is fascism? Mm-hmm. Well, it's government being controlled by oligarchies or corporate America or the ruling class. And so, and even though we might vote for our candidate, they're still in real control of everything. And going to Bloomberg, the stop and frisk. Well, until recently he said it was wrong, but otherwise he kept it through all his, when he was a mayor, he kept it all the way through until the new mayor stopped it. He didn't stop it, you know, while he was mayor.
That's
and
true.
Also, Bloomberg does not believe in term limits. Look what he did to the New York City. The mayor had term limits. And what did he do? Using his money and influence, he overturned that.
No, so I think you're right, and I think that's an important point. The problem, the fundamental problem right now is, I would have to say, in the interest of our country, that any Democratic candidate would be welcome to defeat the clear, petty fascism of Donald Trump. But I appreciate your call, and I think there is a real kind of weirdness to the fact that money talks and you-know-what walks.
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks a lot. 231-8187. Somebody ought to knock me down, tell me I'm just wrong. Let's go out to David. Are you up to doing that?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, Joe, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm going to come at this from the point of an environmentalist, but I'm a conservationist environmentalist, which does make a difference in the way. But there's a couple reasons why. Well, if I was to pick between Trump and Bloomberg or Bernie and anybody, I always look at the environment thing first, is how they, if they're going to protect the little bit of environment we have that hasn't been taken over by people exploiting it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go down that route, I've done it, you'll start to get people telling you that you care more about trees than people. You care more about the butterfly than people. And it kind of ends that, puts a dead end there for environmental. And another way the environmental movement doesn't get heard is because of the word climate change. Because climate change, they've got these deniers and that, and they can make it like it's, well, it's either you're right or I'm right. But when you see oil slicks and stuff, there's nobody saying, this is right, this is wrong. And I'm just saying that's from the view of a conservationist, and I thank you for giving me time to say that.
Oh, sure, man, and I thank you for your comment. I want to be clear about something. The fact of environmental degradation, the fact of climate change, I mean, these are facts. How we deal with them, we can maybe argue, but the fact of the matter is this will be the overwhelming reality for our children, and certainly for our children's children. And this is a very terrifying thing, because once the facts of nature flip, it's really hard to flip it back. And I want to hear from you, all of you, and I do not want to create the sense of despair to the degree that you don't vote. The only solution, however bad or good the Democratic Party candidate ends up being, the only solution to Trump is to get rid of the sucker. I don't mean it in a violent sense, but I mean it in an electoral sense. Let's go out to the phones, 231-8187. Pear, you're on the air.
Hey, morning, Joe.
Morning.
Well, I think we're seeing the breakdown of the binary political system. You know, it's like the U.S. has been at war for almost all its history. And after, amid all the impeachment business, most of the Democrats voted for this weird military budget. We got $738 billion a year for war. And it's really is outlandish. That's what's going to destroy the country, is this war budget. And as far as I can see, you know, Trump wants to go to war with Iran, and a lot of Democrats want to go to war with Russia. You know, what a choice that is. It's, you know, maybe Bernie can save us. Maybe they can save the Democratic Party. I'm hoping they can. But with the Democratic centrists, you don't give me much hope. I'm glad to see that Biden is tanking. I don't know what's going to happen with Buttigieg. I think he's being kind of put up there by the CIA and all their folks.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, you know, actually, when the CIA's politics, remember Henry Scoop Jackson, Cold War liberal?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's sort of what the centrist Democrats are right now.
Well, I don't want to digress into that discussion. I do want to say that, and this is a paradox which disturbs me, it is the case that one will have to hold one's nose and make sure you get rid of the fascist in charge right now. And that bothers me, and I don't know of any other kind of solution. I don't see the sudden appearance of a powerful third party. I don't see the sudden appearance of a great liberal consensus, although Bernie certainly has the charisma and the support to make that happen within the context of the Democratic Party. So in a way, I'm kind of hopeful.
Well, you know, you talk about the German parallels. I don't know, you recall the Strasser brothers?
Yeah.
Well, they were Nazis, but they sort of took the socialist part of the thing a little more seriously. They were a little bit to the left of Hitler, you know? I mean, it's almost like, what if you had a choice between Hitler and the Strasser brothers?
Well, okay, I see where this goes. You're making an interesting point, but here's the deal. We are in a situation where we must be both pragmatic and hopeful. And at this point, Trump has a unique combination of stupidity and ignorance and ambition that can lead us into all kinds of disaster. I brought up the idea of these new low-yield nuclear weapons now on our submarines, now in the Atlantic Ocean, not to terrify people, but to remind us of what the stakes really are.
Well, I think a previous caller made a good point that one thing about Trump is that he's so obviously incompetent. And so some of the other fascist warmongers in charge, they're not so obviously incompetent. They're more slick, they're smoother, they're more polite, more credible with people. So I'll think I'll just end on that.
Okay, thank you a lot for the call. 231-8187, let's go out to Kerry.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I share your desperation. I want to start a caucus to get the Democratic Party to end the primaries, and the candidates form a coalition, pick their parliament or their cabinet, and start campaigning as a unified front to beat this orange-haired orangutan. The Republicans have too much money.
Well, I think you're insulting orangutans there. No, I think orangutans are very cool.
Yeah. The Republicans are well-funded, well-heeled, well-organized, and we're just, the Democrats, the progressives, we're just beating ourselves up. We love all the candidates. They're all qualified. They all have their strengths. And if they formed a coalition and said, okay, this is going to be our president or vice president, we're going to campaign as a unified front. And if we take a page out of Dick Cheney, the most powerful vice president that our country's ever seen, you know, if Elizabeth or Amy or Pete or even Bernie was vice president and somebody was president, yeah, they can get a lot done.
Well, I appreciate the insight. I don't see how that's going to happen this time around.
There's too much money in these states running. The media doesn't want to give up the primaries. They make too much money from it. Just too much money in politics. But yeah, we got to start somewhere.
Okay.
Thanks for your time, Joe.
Thank you for calling. 231-8187. Karen, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Joe. I didn't want to handle the larger questions of Democratic Party politics and so forth, but I did want to respond to the caller who was a conservationist.
Uh-huh.
What I've become increasingly aware of, maybe this would be useful in a conversation, is how much our species must depend on the biosphere. And
We're absolutely dependent on it.
Absolutely. So if we take the conversation in the direction of the trees and what they do for us and how necessary they are, and the oceans and how many people they feed and how fish species are dying and ocean acidification, if we keep it at a large picture level instead of butterflies are more important than people, but put ourselves in the biosphere and talk about how crucial it is for our survival that we're part of it and that we have to love it the way we have to love our trees. You know, we have to have farming practices that keep the soil covered because it's a big carbon sink. And we have many things that we could do that would have great impact and make a huge difference in how we live. So I would just go big picture. That's my recommendation to the conservationist. Thank you, Joe.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
I want to remind people you should call us. I do want to hear from you. 231-8187. Let's go to Charlotte. Charlotte, you're on the air. Maybe not.
Matter if Trump got a second term,
because
he's so incompetent and are acting as if he isn't being destructive every single day in his serving his corporate supporters and the big money supporters who are destroying the earth, who are trying to suck up as much government money as they can, whether it's military industrial complex or prison complex or whatever kind of way they can get government money contracts go to them rather than our taxpayer money going to help support the earth, to help support us. And he's being very effective at it. He's lawlessly being effective at it. Every day now he's doing things both within the law and outside of the law that is destructive of the earth and destructive of people's lives. Lying, of course, about I won't destroy Social Security or Medicare, I'll support you, while he's literally doing regulatory change and doing budgets and going to court on things that he's saying that he's not doing. So, and it's having an impact on our lives now, and if he has another term, it'll be so much worse for the planet, for all of our lives. I just think that people have to really take seriously what an authoritarian leader who has the power of the corporations and the rich behind him, but who don't have total control of him either because he's just for himself. Hey, Hitler was brought into power by the elite thinking that they could control him, and they got their interests served in a lot of ways by him, but they couldn't control him. And the left and the middle ended up being devastated and not being able to come together even. They were fighting with each other as Hitler took power and consolidated power. Just remember those things. So I think that the fascist threat is totally real. It's the most important thing right now on every kind of level. And we have to make sure that Trump does not get reelected.
Okay.
It's just really serious. And don't think that it won't make a difference in everybody's life and in the life of the of the earth.
Okay, well, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Russell. Russell, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Joe. Thanks for your show. Really appreciate it. And I wanted to reiterate what some of the conservationists have said, that the most important issue of our time is the environment. 200 species become extinct every day, and it doesn't seem like this doesn't play much of a role in politics. It's sort of on the side. and nothing that we do really matters if the ravages of climate disruption like fires and flooding become more and more common, which they are, and adding the possibility of nuclear war is just adding to this catastrophic climate disruption. There's a book, The Uninhabitable Earth, that explains in detail what's happening. On April 25th, there's a Climate Healers Health Conference that's being held right in Portland that's going to discuss all this. So,
well, I appreciate the point. And I agree, by the way, that the climate is the primary issue. I also don't want to diss any of the other very important issues, including human rights, of course. But let's go out to Molly. Molly, you're on the air. Sorry, Joel. Go ahead.
Hey, Joe.
Yeah.
Joe, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, I just want to say a couple things, and this is particularly about the primary election. So, first of all, in Iowa, let me start this off first by saying I don't understand any of your pessimism or the pessimism that's out there around Bernie Sanders, because he already won the popular vote in Iowa. He won, okay? That's something people got to wrap their minds around. He's already won something. The DNC tried to steal this from him, and you know what? It didn't work. And one of the things that's going on is with the Democratic on a national scale is it has been so bought out like the Republican Party has. You have all these people working there. They're not working for themselves. They're working for their boss and for their paycheck. So they have absolutely no integrity. That's how you get somebody like Pete Buttigieg as their front runner now. He's like their third choice. So people have got to get it in their minds. Bernie is the choice. Bernie can win, and he will win if people show up and vote. I'm trying not to swear.
I want to give at least one more person a chance to call, and I appreciate the... I appreciate what you just said. Let's go out to Molly. Molly, you're on the air. You have to make it fast.
Yeah. Good morning, everyone. And Joe, I appreciate your form of democracy that here every Tuesday morning. I agree with that last caller. And what I want to get back to is the beginning of your question of, like, why is Bernie losing this momentum, which the Democratic Party dropped back when Hillary became the front runner. And Bernie...
I think Hillary actually ripped Bernie off. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, I just want to say that Bernie has a paradigm shift that the world, not just this country, needs. He wants to take that money from war. We could be back to the leading nation in the world with, like, forget war. We've evolved past that. We want to put this money into saving the world climate and the... Age, I just want to say one thing because I'm running out of time, but age is not dependent on years lived in a lifetime on the planet, because Bernie is very young as opposed to Joe Biden, who is old. But the young people love Bernie, and the young people will get out and vote for Bernie, I think. And that really is an important, very important thing. And I think that there could be the Russians or someone else behind this trying to diminish Bernie right now. Because the people love him, and the money he's raised at $7 a piece from everyone in the nation is impressive.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much. We've run out of time.
Right.
And I really have to say goodbye for the day. I'll see you all next week, and I think my partner will be back here and probably put the reins on my depression. I hope so. All right. See you all later. And just keep on listening to KBOO, and remember, it's not just the best in public affairs, it's also the very best in music.
Against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59. Coming up next is Alternative Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's news and public affairs programs are fueled by our volunteers, and we are always looking for more people to get involved. On Tuesday, February 11th, from 5 to 6 p.m., we will be holding a news and public affairs orientation. This training will offer a crash course in news production and public affairs. In just an hour, we will cover our philosophy, our expectations, how it all comes together, and how you can get started with us. Again, that's the News and Public Affairs Orientation on Tuesday, February 11th from 5 to 6 p.m. at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Sign up on VicNet or email newsdirector@kvu.org to get registered. See you there.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up at 10, it's Flashpoints. Dennis Bernstein speaks with Norman Solomon in New Hampshire at a Buttigieg rally last night. At 11 on stage and studio, DMA presents Black History Month documentary, Our Fathers Who Aren't in Heaven, produced by Michael Johnson. And 11:30 on Wing, Sharon Ellison discusses non-defensive communication, taking the war out of our words. Don't forget you can hear all of these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. And if you want a third way to listen to all your KBOO programming, then download our mobile app today. Now on Alternative Radio, Dr. Robert Fisk will discuss the chaos that Western intervention has provoked in the Middle East.
That we produced ISIS through the barbarity of our outrageous invasion of Iraq in 2003 becomes more evident to me by the month. We created this monstrous deviation from humanity. I think they learned basically from the massacres we perpetrated, the systematic routine tortures we inflicted in Abu Ghraib, which